Entertaining It Live with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
Rita.
Kia ora, how are you guys?
Oh, tēnā koutou. We're actually fantastic. We're just having a Monday situation here, you know, just about to talk, about to go straight into sustaining related stuff, and it's water, is it?
It is.
Okay. What's
your name? Fresh water, in fact.
Is it?
You know, stuff we're running out of in Auckland.
I thought you were going to say that. It has been raining, though.
Yeah, well, apparently some dams are really full, but other ones still aren't, and
did you hear that we've been fast tracks for the Waikato River as well? We're getting all the water we need, just like that. See?
Yes. Well, I don't know. Apparently, it's not all the water we need, though. We're still going to have some issues in summer.
I guess what I'm getting at is, like, they're not going to let us just dry up here, are they? You know what I mean?
No, they will give us water.
Whoever
as well.
They are, you know, like just the whole country.
The central government right. will ensure that we get water, even if that means the Waikato is really polluted. Mm. But my question is what the nitrogen levels are like from that river.
From like farming and stuff like that.
Yeah, because nitrogen causes cancer. And I'm yet to be able to find that out. So watch the space, because I keep asking anyone who will listen to me.
Do you think it's a case of people just don't want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's it's an inconvenient
truth
that we're going to have to deal with.
Interesting.
That they don't want to deal with. So we'll see. It didn't matter before because it was quite diluted, you know, like it was mixed with our water.
I see, what we already had. And, right.
Yeah, whereas now that it's increased, it's sort of like, what does that look like?
Interesting.
Anyway, I ask any counsellor that will have me ask them.
So
we'll get to the bottom of it.
So there isn't like an osmosis technique that gets rid of nitrate?
Not really.
I'm saying words that I don't really know what they mean at the moment, guys. I've got to be honest. I'm just saying buzzwords that I've heard about water.
Well, hopefully by the end of this segment, you'll have a little bit of an idea.
Okay.
Because that's what I'm going to talk about today.
Okay, fantastic.
Now, so this topic is actually really, really complicated. And I've tried to strip it back and make it as simple as possible so that people can understand. But please let me know if you're like, wait, what? Because some things that might make sense to me, I might be still quite complicated.
Okay, I'm good at that. I'm good at asking the dumb questions.
Good. So, in a nutshell, today $62 million was announced for freshwater projects improving our water quality around the country, which, you know, in the surface is really good news. It's part of the Jobs for Nature, which were announced during COVID to help kickstart some jobs, and that's always great. And it's things like restoring wetlands and riparian planting and all that good stuff. And when it comes to cleaning up sediment in particular, it's really good news. But there's always a but with me, isn't there? You know, what I'm concerned about is that there really isn't any point cleaning up waterways if we're still putting crap into them, basically. It's just sort of like we're on a treadmill to nowhere. So that is what I really want to talk about today. And our legislation is a bit of a nightmare. And during the sort of COVID debacle, when we were in the thick of that, there was some back and forward at the end of 2 years worth of work around our fresh water that was announced and kind of was a little bit brushed under the rug. We did have an advocate talk to us in April about it when they were reaching their final conclusion, but I'm here to sort of do a bit of a follow-up about it.
Surely $65 million worth of funding for riparian planting and whatnot is better than doing nothing.
Absolutely better than doing nothing. Mm. Yeah, it is. It is better than doing nothing.
You're saying it's reactionary.
Yeah, it's sort of like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
We're not changing like an institutional problem. We're just kind of
putting a sticky plaster on
it. Yeah.
And it's like, cool, that'll like slow the bleeding, but there's still bleeding happening, you know?
Yeah.
And until you stop the cause of that bleeding, then you know, we're just going to go through bandages forever.
My mum, if we carry on this analogy, my mum used to say, stop picking at that, you know what I mean? It just keeps bleeding. mucking around with a scab. When you're mucking around with a scab when you're a kid, just because it was. John's disappointed. Yeah. John's disappointed with that. So maybe you should carry on with your
Rita,
chat.
What do we need to fix? What do we need to fix here? What's the cause that we need
to... I want to strip it back so people can kind of understand, because it is super complex, but it actually doesn't have to be. So what I'm going to try and do is make this super simple. So basically in June, so last month, the government announced a fresh water reform, like, rescue package. And this came about because, you know, the RMA, or the Resource Management Act, that, and for those of you that don't know, that is basically helps guide how we're going to grow and develop New Zealand and its resources. And it brought together, like, I think it was like 80 different pieces of legislation into one, so that if you wanted to do something, there was only one piece of legislation you needed to go to, rather than having to, like, dig through 7 or 8 different things. So this RMA was really awesome, but because it was so complex and so large, there's some things that are kind of a bit wishy-washy, and freshwater is one of those areas. Under the RMA, the freshwater protections say that the ecosystem of a freshwater body needs to be protected. So what that means to some people is different to what it means to others. Mm. So what is an ecosystem? Does it really need to be, like, what does a functioning ecosystem actually mean? And to a scientist, it means one thing. To a farmer, it means another, you know.
A functioning ecosystem is something that you just... There's something that's already happening before humans even get there. So how do you impart humans into a functioning ecosystem?
There was arguments that say that, they've publicly said it. The National Party have come out very publicly and said there's no way that we can restore rivers to how they were before people got here.
I appreciate that. But...
So then do you throw the baby out with the bathwater and you say, well, we can't have a pristine ecosystem. So at what line do you say, you know, it's functioning and it's not functioning? So that's kind of where this all started from. And this was probably, I don't know, when we started talking about fresh water. I mean, I feel like we've been talking about it for at least 10 years, because it's been degrading. Our freshwater assets have been degrading for a long time now, and about 10 years ago people started really talking about it, and slowly things have been done, but it all stemmed from the fact that that piece of legislation is really wishy-washy, and how it's being implemented in Southland versus Auckland versus Taranaki is completely different. They've taken different kind of interpretations of that law. So then what happened was more recently they set up a freshwater forum. So the Labor government, one of their big policies was that they were going to fix this problem. Of course, that's complicated by having to make some concessions for the New Zealand First Party, but for the most part, they still really wanted to fix this problem. So the way that they went about it was to set up a group of 19 scientists to advise the government on what those rules should be to ensure our waterways.
Nineteen scientists, exactly.
19 scientists. Oh no, maybe there was 20 and one dropped out. I'm not entirely sure. It does seem like a bit of a weird number, but maybe they just were the top specialists in the country, and there just happened to be 19 of them. I'm not entirely sure. But.
And what did they recommend, Rita?
So they made 12 different recommendations to government.
A bit lazy. There's 19 of them. I mean, they all could have had a little thing.
There were 13 recommendations, but they all agreed on 12.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Hey, that actually explains it. That explains it, because there probably was 20, and then one person was trying to go for the extra one, and they kicked him out. That makes sense.
No. There was so of the 12, those recommendations went forward unanimously. They were all very happy with them, things like sediment control and, that sort of stuff. The one that they disagreed on, there were 5 scientists that said, we disagree on this.
And they got rid of that 20th scientist.
I really
conspiracy.
Want to know what happened to that 20th scientist.
Conspiracy, yeah. It's good.
Yeah, he mysteriously just went missing.
Well, or they, you're a scientist, don't, you know.
So I wasn't one of these 19,
okay,
so,
cool.
You know. The 13th recommendation is hugely important, because it relates to nitrogen, our friend that we've been discussing. More specifically, or more accurately, it's dissolved inorganic nitrogen, but we're just going to refer to it as nitrogen, because it's a bit easier. And it's a fertiliser that's put on the land to help grow grass, but to just trying to keep this as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. And that is put on there mainly for dairy. And the reason that it is that means that they can put more cows on the land.
Right, makes sense.
So that's relatively simple. So then what happens is they put nitrogen on the land. It runs into waterways, various ways, usually not straight off. Normally, it normally goes through the cow, but let's just keep it simple. It runs off the land and into the waterways. Sometimes that's overland. Sometimes it's actually just seeped through the ground into groundwater that then eventually makes it into the rivers.
Mm.
And what happens then is that because it's a fertilizer, it makes a lot of algae, it makes a growth of algae in the waterways. So then you get this huge kind of growth of algae in the waterways, and the algae then starves the waterway of oxygen. And that's when you have a problem, because then it leaves the waterway eutrophic, which means dead, basically.
Oh, that's such a great word for dead. What was that word again?
Eutrophic, or eutrophication, I think it's called.
That's a real shame.
When a lake or a river is dead. There's a lot of this in Rotorua, like a lot of the lakes there are eutrophic in state.
So
you can kind of tell because it looks brown and like kind of like Coca-Cola almost.
Right. Sounds like I'd use the word fucked out rather than eutrophic.
So it seems like the cause of all the problems is fairly clear. Are there going to be any action taken towards, you know, reducing head of a cow on
what if we all,
farmland?
If we all eat a cow, would that get rid of the cows, or how does it
less
work?
Less nitrogen use in farming?
Well, I think the idea was that they really wanted to put a limit on how much they can have, how much we can have in the waterways, and then that way we can work backwards and say, okay, cool, you know, we need to have 1 milligram per litre, which is the recommendation that 19 minus 5, I should have done the numbers on that.
The real problem here is people performance. Like, at some point, we wouldn't have used nitrate, and we would have had enough, growing enough cows for whatever we were trying to do. And then export margins need to keep going up and up and up. How do you do that? Well, we found a thing that you pump into the cow or the grass to make it get more cow or grass. Yay. But, oh, by the way, it kills stuff and maybe gives you cancer. So that's the fucking wrong shit to do. So just yo, see ya.
Totally. I mean, to me, it seems really simple. And to make the story even greater.
Like, it'll be great. Yeah. Let's stop giving people cancer. That's a mint headline.
And we spend so much time trying to spend millions and millions of dollars on solving, you know, this nitrogen problem when it's as simple as just having less cows.
Don't have it
and
around.
When they do the maths on it, a farm is actually more profitable with less cows on it because they're having to, obviously put less fertilizer on the paddocks. They're having to have less infrastructure on the paddocks. They're having to milk less.
Yeah.
So all these sorts of things that actually diminishing returns kicks in when they actually start putting all this stuff on the land. But it looks better on paper.
Right.
So we're running, you know, 5,000 cows instead of 1,000. Like it looks better to if you do want to sell your farm, and if you're a corporate farmer, then having 5,000 cows is much better. You know, it's better because you can produce more. So it's kind of like a false economy as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And what it does is it's private profits that then puts the cost of the cleanup onto the public.
Right. Especially since it's running away.
I'm alongside a lot of these freshwater ecologists, I'm not anti-farming.
Mm.
I'm anti-intensified big corporate farming because that's what the problem here is.
Yeah, well, you're anti-poisoning the people in the waterways.
100%. That's sure. Yeah,
who
yeah.
isn't anti that? You know?
I know, absolutely. And just to give you some idea, these scientists were fighting for 1 milligram per litre limit, and when National was in power, they put it at 6.9 milligrams per litre. So that is the toxicity level. So that means at that point, fish are just dropping dead. And it's kind of like saying if you that we should set the drink driving limit to toxicity level. So you can't drink drive if you've had four bottles of whiskey. I mean, it's crazy because we know that much earlier than that, you are losing impairment.
Good analogy, that makes sense.
Setting something at toxicity level is absolutely crazy. And almost every country in the world with half-decent standards has this 1 milligram per litre limit. Even China has it.
So it often feels like we're taken advantage of in the sense that we take on techniques and technologies from other countries that are probably bigger than us. You know what I mean? And it doesn't really work in our landscape. And it's and we almost don't read the fine print. And it's just like, yeah, cool, let's do that. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, it's shit. It's been shit in your country. You know what I mean? It's shit. It's just crap.
Yeah, and also, I really don't understand this, but New Zealand set up the dairy auction, which basically was hailed as this amazing thing where everyone just puts in their dairy and then you know, you pay a price, kind of like the petroleum, the OPEC, you know, where the price is kind of set at a global level.
Right.
But what that means is that our amazing grass-fed, free-range cows and the milk that they're producing go in and are commoditized exactly the same as stuff coming out of like factory farms that have got massive listeria outbreaks and blah, blah, blah. We are different to that, and we should
and
be
people,
different to that.
People do pay the premium for stuff that is sort of, you know, I want to say naturally grass-fed as much as possible. You know what I mean? Like, there is a...
Well, people are happy to, but at the moment, I mean, there is some outbreak, there is some, like, kind of rogue organic farmers, and they're doing really, really well. They're not rogue, sorry. They've got their own, you know, they're not volunteer-based. They don't go into the World Dairy Auction quite the same as everything else. And their cost is upheld. It's got a really great premium on it. So people are willing to pay it. It seems crazy to me that we just put our dairy in with everyone else's because, I mean, maybe I'm a bit biased, but ours has got to be some of the best dairy in the world, surely.
Okay, so you're just hunting around for that and not those nitrate amounts, basically, of the water that we're potentially...
Yeah, so that's what these scientists really want. The five scientists that disagreed with it, their issue was that was a really broad stroke, like saying one across the country.
Yeah.
Maybe some places need more, maybe some places need less. The issue with that is that then we're just going to talk about that for another 20 years. You know, having a limit is better than having a limit that means that you can have a functioning ecosystem. Okay, it's not pristine ecosystem, but it does mean that at least the rivers and lakes aren't dead. You know, that's what we want to aim for. And then sure, over time, then maybe what we need to say is, oh, in Canterbury, we need a little bit less. And in Taranaki, we can have a little bit more because of the soil types. But, you know, that one is... that special number, 1 milligram per litre, is the key here. And unfortunately, what they came out and did is they just, I think Labor kind of panicked and went in between what it is now, 6.9 and 1. They went, let's go for, I don't know, 2.6. But, I mean, that's kind of like the analogy that these scientists are giving is it's kind of like saying that instead of having a 100-kilometre speed limit, we've gone from 690 to 260 kilometres. Like, it doesn't matter at that level, it's toxic anyway.
Yeah,
you know, it's still going to kill things. So, kind of, what's the point? We should keep an eye on this. And it's a hugely complex scientific kind of topic, but I'm hoping that gives people a little bit of an understanding of it so that if, you know, we can keep an eye on it in the future, because what we don't want to happen is that a government gets in and pushes that number up. We want to keep putting pressure to get that to one.
We don't want to be ingesting something that we know that's bad. Just for the extra paranoids out there, can you boil water and get rid of nitrate?
No, you can't.
Fuck.
It's a hugely expensive process to get rid of.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And you can't get rid of it, not by boiling, and none of our water treatments gets rid of it. And multiple studies overseas have linked it very strongly, correlated it to bowel cancer.
Out of it.
And we're seeing bowel cancer rates in this country high, very high in areas where the nitrates are high. So it was pretty well connected now. There's no one that's refuting that it doesn't cause bowel cancer. And it's just a case of, you know, we need to set some limits around that, because those drinking limits are really high too.
Okie dokie, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Rita.
Thanks. Heavy topic, no, but, right on, right you on. Know, might leave you something to think about and ponder over the next few days.
Yeah, for sure. Probably just start bottling up water now, actually.
Yeah, it's not. Catch some rainwater, you know. Yeah. I don't know why people think rainwater is so bad to drink.
Every house should have a little tank. A little tank and a little solar system.
Yeah, you know. I mean, sure, you have to keep your roof a bit clean and your tank a bit clean, but
You really don't. A little dead bird will just filter out some stuff. Don't worry about it. I grew up on tank water and I'm totally fine. You know,
I've had tank water most of my life and I've had no problem.
You're a scientist, so.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I haven't really looked that far into it, but I've looked in the tank multiple times. It looks pretty clean to me, and it tastes better. I come into the city and I taste water, and I'm like, oh,
it shouldn't
taste like
anything. That's the bottom line. Hey, Rita, we'll do
water
this again next
like
week.
Like cold nothing.
Right on, exactly.
Right, guys, you have a great week.
You too.
See ya.
That was Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele on 95 BFM.